is KAZU, Pacific Grove, Radio with a Choice. My name is Mae Brussel. The name of the program is World Watchers. It is program number 825, September the 28th, 1987. Before I begin the program, I want to say the views expressed here are those of myself or my guests when I have them and do not necessarily reflect the views of KAZU staff or board of directors. We want to thank Coast Components at 684-1185, the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that helps bring you the following hour of World Watchers. And the following hour of World Watchers is made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. And how much news there is this week, I will be rolling along trying not to go faster than ever, but there is so much and impossible to cover in an hour, but I'll do the best that I can. First of all, I want to call attention to an article I found in the LA Herald. It hasn't been printed too much, but it has been mentioned on a few programs that Mr. Gorbachev, the Soviet Communist Party chief, Mikhail Gorbachev, has not been seen since August the 6th. A newspaper in the Soviet Union, the name is Bild, B-I-L-D, said that he had serious food poisoning while he was visiting the Black Sea, had a vacation, was hospitalized, and that he was taken back to Moscow on a train, not on his usual airplane. And they called attention to the fact that there was an assassination attempt in February when a police car was filled with explosives and was discovered one day before he visited Riga. Now, I've mentioned many times that the goal of Nancy Reagan is to get her husband's face carved in Rushmore, and time is running out. So they have to have some kind of a peace proposal, and all of a sudden he's hurrying with a peace proposal that I'm sure the Soviet Union knows has nothing to do with peace. We're escalating the Star War funds at the same time that he wants a summit in order to reduce 3% of the nuclear weapons placed in Europe that the Americans and Soviet Union have, and a few more technicalities that don't even scratch the surface, as we tested a new bomb in Nevada this week. And there are people that would not trust Ronald Reagan, I'm sure, and wouldn't want a peace conference with Ronald Reagan. I wouldn't want it either if I were the Soviet Union. I don't know who's poisoning Gorbachev, but remember the meeting of Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, and Nikita Khrushchev, where Eisenhower hoped also to have a goal of peace after World War II and after World War I. And on the eve of a summit, the U-2 flight was down, and Nikita Khrushchev accused Eisenhower of doing what he said he wouldn't do, using the U-2 planes to spy, and he had ordered the planes not to be flying at that time so they could have somewhat of a mini detente, and that was called off, and the rest of that is history. Norman Cousins wrote a book called The Improbable Triumvirate regarding John Kennedy, Pope John the 23rd, and Nikita Khrushchev. It came out in 1972. And the gist of the book is that after the Cuban Missile Crisis in October of 62, up to the time when John Kennedy was murdered, November 63, there was a new spirit of optimism at work in the world that the dramatic end of that crisis signaled an upturn in prospects for peace. Three men came to symbolize the new prospects: President John Kennedy, Nikita Khrushchev, and Pope John the 23rd. And Pope John the 23rd was also working with Patrice Lumumba, who was murdered in the Congo right in the same time period that Pope John died of cancer and John Kennedy was murdered in November. The Pope died in May, Kennedy died in November, and then the Soviet Union immediately removed Nikita Khrushchev, probably realizing that that peace effort was over now, given the circumstances that took place. Also blaming Lee Harvey Oswald as being an agent of the Soviet Union, who would want to talk peace anymore with the United States. It turns out that Norman Cousins became a very active person in the peace movement. He represented John Kennedy with the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty and made proposals to the Congress for the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, and there have been many articles based on the fact that Kennedy's assassination could have been motivated in part by persons not wanting the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. And Norman Cousins got the Peace Medal at the United Nations, awarded by Youthant in 1963. Youthant was replaced by Mr. Waldheim, and you've heard the stories about Waldheim and his World War II record. He got a peace medal from Pope John the 23rd for his part in peace. And, of course, all of that effort was gone by the November 63. And then Norman Cousins wrote a book, The Anatomy of an Illness, as Perceived by a Patient. It was published in 1979. And in that book, he tells how he got seriously ill in 1964 after his friend, the Pope, John 23rd, was dead and Kennedy was dead. He was in Europe. He came home and he had a terrible disease and went into the hospital immediately, and the illness surfaced, and he was in, it was August 64, less than a year from the time his friend John Kennedy was killed. He was in the hospital, and he said within a week, it was difficult to move my neck, arms, hands, fingers, and legs. The sedimentation rate was over 80. And what he said was that four technicians came into his room from four different departments for a separate and large amount of blood samples and started coming the second day to fill their containers with blood. And he heard them talking about how he was going to die. And he has lectured about this ever since and talks to people about this subject and was reluctant to discuss it for quite a few years. This happened in 1964. And he checked himself out of the hospital. The rest is history. He knew that he was going to be literally killed in the hospital and not gotten well. He heard them talking about his imminent death, got out, got himself some books with humor, put himself, I believe, at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and recuperated at a will to live, heard them talking about his death. And that would have been John Paul XXIII and John Kennedy and Norman Cousins, one after the other, that worked closely together. And as I say, Khrushchev was out of the running. So just mentioning Gorbachev's illness at a time when he's making an effort for peace and trying to be more open, we'll have to remains to see what happens to him, but it's worth calling attention to it. Well, for the past 4 weeks, I've been talking about the links of the White House, the National Security Council, Oliver North, Albert Hakim, and General Secord, to the Middle East narcotics traffic, the arms for narcotics, the terrorist groups that they were allegedly put together to fight, the great anti-terrorist group in the National Security Council, Ollie North's almost direct links, buying arms for the Contras from persons supplying Abu Abbas and George Habash of the PLO, and then the next week it was his friend Abu Nidal, and then four consecutive weeks, the links of this administration to the actual terrorists became more open and exposed. And then there was this gigantic arrest in Italy several weeks ago where 32 people are arrested, and they were from the very comfortable right, a group of people that were sending 3 million mines to Iran. The company was owned 50% by Mr. Agnelli, a co-chairman of Kissinger Associates, and it included plans to kill Ronald Reagan. And the prosecutor said several weeks ago that this story would turn half of Europe upside down. Well, one gentleman who would have gone belly under, upside down, who's directly linked to the Syrian drug connection, to the late Henry Arsan, is Licio Gelli. He got the message loud and clear and turned himself in to the authorities in Switzerland just this past week, since I was on the air last Monday. Now, if you don't take the New York Times and you don't read Wall Street Journal, then you don't even know that the great Licio Gelli is now allegedly in a Swiss hospital for a very bad heart. I think he wants to prove that he has a heart and he needs heart surgery. That even may be a hoax based upon his background. Gelli was indicted, the Wall Street Journal reminds people, for the breaking up of the Banco Ambrosiano. He's wanted for the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano that's linked to the Vatican Bank and Paul Marcinkus and John Paul II. He's wanted in Italy and Florence for the Bologna bombing and for the combined murder of over 92 people. He has been described as part of an armed band involved with political and military espionage, conspiracy, subversive association, extortion, and fraud. This is the gentleman that went to Ronald Reagan's inauguration the first time and could have been there the second time disguised. He's very close to Michael Ledeen, the National Security Council, and the Reagan administration. Wall Street Journal said that he appeared at Geneva at the Jean de Hollande prison. That's where he escaped. He paid the people to let him walk out a few years ago, 4.5 years ago, and he's so instrumental in important in knowing a lot of the key pieces of the Iran-Contra affair, particularly, and the new scandals breaking up in the Middle East, which are the really, really big story. The others are important, but this makes a full circle from Brazil, South America, Colombia, Brazil, and Bolivia, and then to Syria, and then back to Italy, and then back to New York, to the banks of E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch that I've done broadcasts about. The Wall Street Journal says the jelly paid the guards 4.5 years ago to get out. Now he's returned, and he's in poor health, and the doctors are going to tell him whether he can testify at some of these trials. The Swiss government has agreed to keep him until he serves his time there for matters that he's been charged with, and then hopefully, if he lives that long, he'll go to Italy. He's aware of the fact, of course, that his co-partner, Roberta Calvi, was hung in London, and Michele Sindona was given cyanide in the Rome jail, and Francesco Pazienza, his co-partner in the Bologna bombing of no less than 80 people and injuring 160, he's sitting in Italian jail with his friend Stefano Della Calle, one of the godfathers of the strategy of tension. So he appeared this past week, and the Wall Street Journal said it seemed possible last night that Mr. Jelly planned to talk to Italian authorities, but it was uncertain whether he would have the opportunity. The Swiss Justice Ministry said Jelly would have to serve his sentence in Switzerland before extradition was considered to Italy, and he is hinting and offering to testify after his heart surgery. Now, that's a really funny term, after the heart surgery. 50% of the people in Europe would want him to die on the table, and 50% would want him to live so he can tell where the $1.2 billion is in dummy fronts in Panama, how many Contras and death squads he funded, and how many links to the American intelligence community. So I guess it depends who does the surgery and who does the anesthetic on Lissio Jelly. It's probably a toss-up in the nurse who can pull out the tubes. So, as I say, he's under investigation in Rome for the bombings in Florence and Bologna on various charges, which include, again, belonging to an armed band, political and military espionage, conspiracy, subversion, extortion, and fraud. That's about the matter of what they want him for. And just to remind you of past broadcasts I've done, and the Wall Street Journal talks about his being the Grand Master of the Propaganda Dewey, the Masonic Lodge. Also, membership in there includes people like Henry Kissinger and Michael Ledeen. But Jelly was a member of the Waffen-SS for Hitler. He was part of Mussolini's MSI. He fought with Francesco Franco, and then he went to Argentina to help Evita Perón put the cash into the Swiss banks that would be used when she mysteriously died after a trip to Europe, where she was given a cancer, or all of a sudden has her quick trip home and then dies conveniently of cancer. And then the money deposited in her name in the banks was unleashed, a minimum of $54 million in cash and over $100 million in gold, some round figure like that. Also, Lissio Jelly built the rat line. He worked for the United States equivalent of the intelligence operation right after the OSS was forming the CIA in that time period. He helped the great Klaus Barbie escape, who links up with the Iran-Contras in Central and South America, and the White House team that are in power now. And the rat line was notorious with the Vatican of allowing hundreds, maybe 100,000 top Nazis to escape to South America, Middle East, and then to Asia. No wonder we have so much tension around the world at the present time. The story about Lissio Jelly being arrested, Wall Street Journal, September 22nd, and September 28th is a picture of Vice President George Bush, who got on an airplane very quickly, of course, and showed up he was escorted by the Italian Prime Minister Giovanni Goria, and they were on their way to a meeting in Goria's office. Now, you can just imagine the conversation between George Bush and Goria. George Bush's brother, Prescott, is a Knight of Malta with the Vatican. He's part of the AmeriCares organization, the Vatican branch that funds the Contras particularly. I won't do their worldwide operations, but Claire Luz and Alexander Agin William Simon are Knights of Malta with Prescott Bush, and a good hunk of that money is in the Ambrosiana banks in Panama and the Cayman Islands in the Bahamas. So Bush got his butt to Europe very quickly, and also the articles I've been citing from the new exposés of the arrests in Italy These were the people that were going to kill Ronald Reagan in June. And at this point, George Bush would be President Bush visiting over there. So former director of CIA. So it was interesting that 4 days after Jelly was safely in a Swiss hospital, Bush went over to the office of the head of the Italian government. Newsweek had a small article, but important, September 28th, 1987, titled Iran-Contra Plot Missed. Well, the title should be Iran-Contra Plot Avoided. And it goes into the fact and makes apologies by saying that there were tight deadlines on the hearing and political caution have blocked some intriguing lines of inquiry into the Iran-Contra affair. Well, I might interject the way it was made up, they never intended to get there. It wasn't money or time. Well, if they opened it up, it would have taken a few years. That's true. If it's a tight deadline, they couldn't get into the matters that I've been discussing on this program for the past years. But Newsweek said if the Contras were really a key concern, the thinking goes, why did $3.5 million from Iran Arms get to the Contras? And while there's $8 million remaining in these various banks, and they quoted Casey last November 21st, he volunteered that the National Security Council staff was guiding Contra supply operations. The Newsweek account says that one theory is that Casey wanted to limit the scope of the impending investigations to protect a wide range of activities, and perhaps one of the investigators or several said on the committee that they don't dismiss the theory that they missed other covert actions some witnesses were aware of, and possibly counterterrorism plans in the Middle East. Well, that's right. If they went into the area of the Reagan administration, they'd have the Bologna bombing, the Red Brigades, the murder of Aldo Moro, the Sadat murder, the Achille Lauro hijacker, the TWA hijacking, the Roman Vienna airport hijacking, the Lebanon bombing when the 80 were killed, and a lot more. Obviously, when they opened that can of worms, they really couldn't go too far into it. The a part of Bob Woodward's book, Veil, has been quoted in all the newspapers since last Saturday, this past Saturday. And one item that caught my interest, as much that we'll be talking about probably every week for years to come, was the fact that the CIA and the National Security Council wanted to kill Sheikh Mohammed Hussein Fadallah in Lebanon. So they planted a bomb. The CIA wouldn't do it. They had Saudi Arabia, their good friends, do it for us. And the bomb didn't get Fadallah. It got 80 people, the identical number killed at the Bologna bombing. And again, another 160 were killed. And the CIA was doing what they do best. They all agreed that Israel would take the rap for it. Here is the United States government and Saudi Arabia making the arrangements. And Israel consents to take the rap in return for getting the weapons they need. And Saudi Arabia in return for getting the weapons they need. They don't care how many they killed. And when they didn't get the guy they wanted, they gave him $2 million and he shut up, and that soothed everybody. It reminds me of the political assassinations in this country where people involved who survive and members of their family know that there's been a conspiracy and they're silenced. And I know there must be a huge amount of cash that is put in their hands to keep them quiet so they won't open up the case. A perfect example is Coretta Scott King giving Ryosha Sasakawa the Medal of the Year, the Martin Luther King Medal, a year ago on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's death, a man who describes himself as one of the world's greatest fascists, and he gave $7 million to the Martin Luther King Institute. The Wall Street Journal also had an article last Tuesday titled, Europeans Slow the Flow of Arms to Iran. Now, the interesting part of this story is not only how many arms go to Iran from Europe, but the way the article begins, because by the time they get to the second paragraph, they're into the murder of two primary witnesses, and Wall Street Journal seems to be writing like Mae Brussels is talking. Years ago, or months ago, or weeks ago, they would tell a story and they'd refer to the late ambassador from Austria to Greece. Now they get right onto the business as soon as they tell the story. I'll just give you the opening lines. It said the police this month raided Linz, an office in Linz, Austria, the offices of Noricom AG, arms-making subsidiary of Bost Alpine. And I had that item on the air about 4 weeks ago. It set off a national scandal in Austria with front-page banners because this company was sending only $564 million worth of arms to Iran that I guess they found on the first papers. Noricom's former chief was arrested, and there were dark reminders that an Austrian ambassador to Greece and the former chairman of the company themselves, of Bost, both died suddenly while giving evidence on the case to the authorities. So right off the bat, they say that they note that while they were giving evidence about this scandal, these two particular people died and were off an ambassador and the president of the company. Things aren't getting settled very long. Now, Arnaud de Borchgrave is a great master of disinformation, and he does a lot of it with his friend Michael Ledeen. And as the Middle East stories are breaking for the past 4 weeks in the news, the Washington Times, that is put out by Reverend Moon with de Borchgrave as editor, has to counteract always and bring up these same old smirky stories instead of getting into the facts as they're being unfolded. So they took one half of a page of the Washington Times, September the 11th, 1987, and there's a picture of Aja, Mehmet Ali Aja, behind bars. It says, here's Aja. He testified from a cage during the trial of the three Bulgarians and four Turks for the conspiracy to shoot the Pope. Now, that's hardly a new news story. There was a trial for a year, and they couldn't find evidence to the fact. But what they're doing is deflecting from the Middle East news, and the title, which is a non sequitur with Aja's picture, is Kremlin Faces Formidable Opponent in Vatican. And the gist of the whole article is that the Pope wants to go to the Kremlin again on the 1,000-year ceremony of the Christian Church next year in the Soviet Union. That's what the article's about. But this is the way it begins. How many divisions does the Pope have? You've heard that story. Joseph Stalin asked during World War II, quite enough to make trouble, might be Mikhail Gorbachev's answer. He didn't say it at all. They're just saying what he might have said. And it goes on, enough trouble, perhaps, for the Kremlin to have connived in the attempted murder of John Paul II. True, an Italian court left moot the question of whether Bulgarians or the Soviets, most loyal satellites, were behind Aja and when he shot the Pope in St. Peter's Square. But Western intelligence sources say they don't want to speak publicly, but they remain convinced that Moscow approved of it. Now, there has been much evidence since of Theodore Shackley working for the P2 for the Super Sees Me in Italy, the Italian intelligence, arriving to work with Francesco Pazienza. And Pazienza was named by Aja as being one of the people behind the conspiracy to get him involved. And Frank Turpel, closely associated with the Stanford Technology Training Group, trained Aja. And the evidence of the secret team is very solid behind the Pope shooting and the agents involved there, including Michael Ledeen, who was the chief disinformation factor with Paul Hensa from the CIA and Claire Sterling. So as the Middle East stories break, we are told once again, like we are every year on the anniversary of murder John Kennedy, that Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone. But this time, it's a big story that has nothing to do with the shooting of the Pope, except it begins that way and then goes into religion in the Soviet Union. But the main thing you see is Aja in a cage. Now, I was going to do 1 hour of this broadcast on newspaper translations that I've been getting from a listener in Italy. But because of The Veil, that book that Bob Woodward came out with, I want to get into some of the items that were just reprinted in the newspaper this weekend. So I'll give you just a couple of translations and then maybe, hopefully, get back to this. Maybe really do a whole hour on it so that I don't disrupt the thoughts. But I want to share a few translations that I have. One is from La Repubblica, February the 2nd, 1987, the beginning of this year. And it has to do now with Jelly turning himself in and being linked in such great conservative papers with his bombing, extortion, and all the crimes that he's done. The article says, in September of 1985, the American government offered Licio Jelly an honorable surrender in the United States that would provide security measures and protection and adequate accommodation and precise agreement on his legal situation. This is the Waffen-SS, the rat line with Barbie and the whole thing I went down with you, okay? Essentially, the Reagan administration and Edwin Meese assured the Grand Master that if he appeared in the United States, he would receive special treatment in the United States. And, in fact, the State Department would call on Jelly personally to dictate the terms so he would not be arrested, he would not be extradited like Francesco Pazienza. Providing the Bologna magistrates with this surprising information was none other than Francesco Pazienza, who was slapped into a jail taken from the United States, and he's being charged with the Bologna bombing, and his co-partner is offered citizenship in the United States. Francesco Pazienza said from the bundles of papers he brought with him from New York, he pulled out a letter, a copy of a letter dated September 3rd, 1985, that was sent to a lawyer, Mario De Pietropaolo, from a criminal lawyer in New York, who had handled the case at the highest level of the Justice Department to discuss the matter of jelly. They would tell of having to meet the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Andreotti. At a certain time, the negotiations between the United States State Department and jelly did come to a standstill. The reason wasn't clear. Perhaps the Grand Master saw what happened to Pazienza, the co-collaborator of Mr. Santaviti, who in the end was not only arrested but extradited, and maybe he didn't trust Washington at this point. In the correspondence between the lawyers, Jelly uses the name Maurice III. His attorney is Paul Goldberger of the law office in New York of Goldberger and Dubin of New York City, and this was the letter. Dear Maurizio, after much preliminary work and discussion, I think we are in a most advantageous position for the plans discussed here in the United States on behalf of Maurice. I am in a position to obtain a written agreement with the Justice Department, confirmed at the highest level, which guarantees the most absolute way that points you and your client. Absolutely, there will not be any possibility of confusion in the pact. It will be binding in the United States courts. Some of this wording is turned around a little because it is someone translating the Italian newspaper. Maurizio, it is important that you understand the situation of Pazienza should not be regarded as precedent for all things concerning Maurice III. I must meet you and your client personally so I can proceed with the preparation. Then the agreement could be completed with the government in written form. Only when the agreement is safely in our hands will your client appear in the United States. All arrangements, including those concerning security form and accommodation, legal situation, etc., will be taken care of in advance to avoid your client any inconvenience. Heavens, we wouldn't want Licio Jelly to be inconvenienced at anything after building such a nice rat line and all the work he did for the P2 and bombing all these people and setting up secret governments, including Henry Kissinger and Ladin and his super seismic, his great Italian network. Why would we inconvenience Licio Jelly? The letter concludes, at the moment, the circumstances are particularly favorable for obtaining everything you want. We are very close to settling the matter, and we will meet here as soon as possible, and the government has given the firm approval. This is the Reagan administration offering, in this time and period, a sanctuary to a man with such a horrendous record across the board, taking away money from the Banco Ambrosiano, funding the death squads, etc., etc., but nothing is too fine for the Reagan administration. Also, in 1983, just after Pazienza was arrested, La Repubblica had an article, March the 13th, that the police, Interpol, the Italian intelligence, the CICIS, and the CISDEI, two separate branches, are holding a precise report about a very calm summer following the June 1982 hanging of their co-partner, Roberta Calvi, in London, and all the clues linked to Licio Jelly regarding the various happenings, and also he was spending the summer with his friend Francesco Pazienza and Mr. Carboni, who denied they didn't know Licio Jelly, but of course it turns out they did. The summer reports are part of four large dossiers put together by CISDEI on every move of Carboni. He was the last person with Roberta Calvi at the hotel and arranged a trip to England when he was hung. And the article goes on, there are 1,000 firms or dummy fronts made up by Carboni, who are spread up and cover all of his shady activities. July 15th, 1982, that's a month after their good friend and president of Banco Ambrosiano was found dead in London. It continues, the dossier claims that Licio Jelly is in Gland near Geneva with Ortolani, Pazienza, and Carboni. Jelly seems to have a passport issued to Pietro Crisiolo, that's the name he used, and Pazienza, Carboni, and Adnan Khashoggi were all close associates. Adnan Khashoggi is the man that Oliver North and the National Security Council went to for $10 million to buy the original arms for Iran. And when Iran paid back the money, Khashoggi wasn't paid back. He and his friend Mr. Furmark, they sent some of it down to the Contras and kept some in their bank account. And that was part of the story that unraveled the whole Iran-Contra affair, because they went to William Casey. Mr. Furmark is a legal client of his, and Khashoggi has worked for the United States government for years, and said, hey, we want our bucks back. And at that point, things started rolling and brought the Iran-Contra affair just to the status that it is now. Not too much revealed, but plenty enough to go on, as I say, for years to come. Now I'm going to take a 1-minute break, as I usually do at this moment.